Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and today my guest is Monica Sanford, who is a doctor of nursing practice and VA disability claims examiner. She brings invaluable insights into the VA disability claims process, and today she'll be sharing some advice for veterans who are preparing for their VA disability exams and navigating the complexities of the claim process. But first, before we get into all of that, I want to welcome you to the show, Monica. I'm really glad to have you here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. This is great.
We were talking before we started recording here, and I always appreciate people coming on and sharing their expertise and their knowledge about whatever it is that they have to bring to the table and taking time out of their day. So I really am appreciative of you coming on. So can you just kind of give us an overview of kind of the benefits process, like who can apply for VA disability benefits and what type of disabilities are eligible for compensation?
Yeah. So first, I am a doctor of nursing practice. Like you said, I'm an acute care nurse practitioner, mainly in cardiology and admitting hospitalists for about 25 years. Been married to a Marine for 34 years. Mom, dad, sister, Army, big military family, nieces, nephews, sure, all in the military. But so I see patients for the VA for veteran disability claims. So to answer your question, if you are in any service, go apply. Go to va.gov, see what you qualify for, see if you can apply. The only thing that may slow you down a bit is if you were dishonorably discharged or, something to that effect. And even then you can appeal that process and then you can probably still apply, especially if you had an in-service event. But so anybody can apply to answer your question.
Yeah, no, that's great to know too, because, a lot of times I hear from people and they say, well, I never deployed, so I don't qualify or
yes,
something. Like they get that idea in their head and, it's like that's not true. There's things that happen in training or, stuff that you might be doing here at home that would qualify for a VA disability. And
right. And a lot of people think just if it doesn't fall under the PACT Act, like if it doesn't fall under deployment, like you said, in Iraq or Afghanistan or Vietnam or things like that, that they can't apply. That is totally not true. We have all kinds of applications that we can go into. But yeah, definitely go apply.
Yeah, for sure. I always kind of think of it this way. It's like, what's the worst that they can do is just say no. And
right,
so you're kind of in the same position that you were in to begin with. But on the flip side, if you do apply for the benefits and you get approved and you get what, whatever it is that you applied for, now you have, monthly income coming into you.
Even at least 10%. Rate, 10%
yeah, exactly,
or whatever. And any type of claim and, the types of claims are so wide ranging. And I mean, I can go into a few real quick, the
sure,
types.
Sure.
Right now with the PACT Act, of course, it is a lot of respiratory issues, a lot of sinus. If you have sinus, rhinitis issues, just from inhalation type things and exposures, any type of cancer, skin cancers, any type of cancers definitely apply. Mainly though, we get a ton of musculoskeletal, orthopedic type, neck, back, shoulders, knees, ankles, wrists. I mean, I had a mechanic come in, a Marine, and he said for years, all he did was crank on a wrench, and now his wrist is kind of arthritic, has arthritis changes. So we had a lot of different, and if you don't have a diagnosis and if you don't know your diagnosis, that's totally an appropriate answer. Just say you don't know. And
sure,
that's what we're there for, is a medical opinion.
Right. And for folks who are like that, where it's possible that they never, saw a doctor while they were in service because
right,
maybe the issue didn't necessarily, present itself during the service, but, over time, it wore down on them, like that mechanic who was cranking on a wrench, right? there are some conditions that, you know, kind of based on the job that you had, it's kind of like, well, yeah, okay, that makes sense. You know,
yeah,
like the mechanic, right?
It is actually one of the first questions I always ask, and is on your paperwork, is what's your MOS? So we say, what was your MOS, deployable or not deployable? I just want to know what you did. So it was in your MOS, and then questions are going to be just like this. It's like, if you have a diagnosis, let me know. If you don't know, just say you don't know. But the date, if you went to be seen, if you didn't go to be seen, you can tell me why you didn't go be seen. Some people don't, you know, the military member will not go to be seen if they're afraid they're going to lose flight status or deployment status or, you know, their hazard pay, anything like that, that may prevent them from going to be seen. I will put that in my note and say, you know, they were not seen in service for whatever reason. And, but the claim is, you know, still the claim. I want to know everything about that claim that you can remember. So my advice would be to sit down before you do your claim and mentally prepare yourself to think about everything around that situation, around that claim. What happened? Was it just in boot camp, repetitive use, overuse, too many push-ups and pull-ups, and now your wrist hurt, your shoulders hurt, you ran too much on your ankles, you know, things like that. And a lot of them is just repetitive overuse of carrying heavy stuff, you know, and it is, you're carrying your rifle and your rucksack, and then you have to carry your buddy's stuff too. You know, whatever it is, that, you know, can add up. And I want all my 20-year-old Marines and any Army and, you know, any service out there, I want them to, that 20-year-old, to think like a 60-year-old. You know, it may not hurt now, but when you're 60,
it will.
It will definitely, you know, so keep that in mind. It's like, God, I'm, you know, wrenching my back every time. I had somebody that kept jumping. He worked on a flight line, kept jumping from the wing down to this hard cement, you know, the flight line. And now, you know, 30 years later, his back is just jacked up. So,
yeah,
you know,
right.
To keep all that in mind.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, folks who are, you know, starting the process to apply for the benefits, you mentioned, you know, maybe having a diagnosis, but, you know, sometimes they don't have a diagnosis. Where can they start as far as like evidence collection? Like what type of information should they be considering putting together for their claim?
Right. Process? And the main thing is your story. That your story is going to be golden to me. I'm going to paint that picture. I'm going to tell that story. So that's why I'm saying sit down and think about the whole situation, when it started, how it started. Did you go to physical therapy for it, or you're just take over-the-counter ibuprofen or Tylenols, whatever. Do you do a lidocaine patch over the counter? Whatever it is, how you treated it then and then how you treat it now, because that is going to be the next questions are going to be, how does it affect you then? How does it affect you now? Your functional ability, your daily life. You know, I have veterans that hurt their neck and now it hurts for them to even turn to drive. You know, they're like turning, their shoulder is cranked, their necks are cranked. But, and if you have a neck, back, hip injury, things like that, then be prepared to, or if it worsens, meaning all of a sudden you have radiculopathy, a radiating nerve pain from that area, that's a different claim. So go back and claim it, you know, things like that. So be prepared. I totally got off from your question, I think, but.
No, that's okay.
You know, we have veterans that, you know, now it hurts them to drive, hurts them to climb a ladder, hurts them to do just gripping things, you know, yard work, housework, you know, things like that. So keep all of that in mind.
Yeah. And so basically documenting all the things that whatever the condition is preventing you from doing,
right.
You know, like you said earlier, coming up with what was it in service? What was it that caused this, you know, the mechanic who was, you know, kind of wrenching, you know,
and it doesn't have to be an injury or a trauma or something. It can be overuse, repetitive use, heavy things like that. But you said about the documentation. It's, you know, we have so many that come in, they don't have records. And that's totally fine. So, but the documentation can be a lay statement from your buddy, from your, you know, sergeant or whoever said, you know, he was running, we had to pull him out. He or she was running and we had to pull him out of, you know, the run or whatever. you know, things like that, because their ankles were hurting or their back was hurting, you know, whatever it was, get a lay statement. I have so many lay statements for sleep apnea from the wife or significant other that said they just snore all night and they stop breathing. You know, things like that need to be investigated, need to be addressed. And so it can be lay statements. Definitely, if you see somebody outside of the VA system, have those records either sent in to the VA or hand carry them. I have people hand carry me or email me. I always give my email address to my veterans and say, if you remember something while we leave here, just email it to me. And they email me pictures of them in cast in their uniform and say, this was, you know, 20 years ago, whatever. But yeah, just document as much as you can.
Yeah. And when you document all of this stuff, even like you said, even pictures or videos that might, with the helmet cams that people have now and even cell phones and videos and stuff that people are using, it's very likely that someone is recording as whatever incident takes place.
100%.
It could be, like you said, not a significant traumatic effect, but it could show you doing that thing, working as a mechanic and doing that repetitive motion is like, okay, like this is me doing it. Like here it is, and you can see it, right? And so that's just one piece of evidence to support that claim, right? Now when this is kind of just like evidence gathering, but when they actually get to the exam, the compensation pension exam, what can they do to best prepare for that? Yeah.
Yeah, it is one to wear something comfortable, wear comfortable shoes, wear something comfortable. Excuse me. And I'm saying that because we're going to get comfortable with answering a lot of questions. Excuse me. So it is expect to, a lot of it is interview. We're talking to you. I'm asking you a bunch of questions about, your service or any service treatments, things like that. So be comfortable with that, but be ready to move. I have to measure your range of motion on your shoulder, your neck, your back. I am going to be moving you in positions that you may not think of, but if I move your shoulder up and say, this is how I reach up to get, dishes out of the cabinet, and there's like, I can't go past that, 90 degrees or whatever it is. So I measure everything, any kind of joint movements, things like that. Any kind of, be prepared for me to take photos. If you have scars, I need to take photos of them. And those scars, I need to measure them. So when you come in to see me, I'm going to be kind of head to toe talking. Depending on what the claim is, we're going to be very focused on that claim. If it is just a right shoulder, I am measuring your right shoulder, things like that. But if it's your feet, ankles, stuff like that, you're going to have to take socks and shoes off and let me do some measurements. And if there's any scars, take pictures of your feet and your scars and things like that. So dress comfortable, be comfortable. And I ask the VA to give me 1 hour with each veteran. So I have plenty of time to get the entire story.
So. Sure. Yeah. And so, from what you're saying, there's an interview type question. So you want to find out in their own words, what happened, what's going on, what is it preventing you from doing? And also, on the physical side is, How far can you actually, I want to see how far you can actually reach or, whatever the condition is. So,
and do you have flare? Yeah. Like, does it flare up during the week, during the month, one time a month, one time, things like that. And what happens during those flares? Like, I literally have got to sit on my couch all day because I can't move because my back is out, and I take lidocaine. And, when's the last time you went to the ER for it? Imaging is big. If you have anybody out there listening right now, if you have a back problem, ask your provider to send you for at least an x-ray, MRI, things like that. Because I can request it. I can recommend them, but I can't order them. And so it just helps the process if you already have it done.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can, if it's done through the VA, that stuff is automatically, provided to the provider who's doing the exam. So you'll have that information right in front of you and you'll kind of have an idea, little heads up beforehand, what's going on with this person. You also mentioned the PACT-AC earlier. Could you talk about a little bit more about how this impacts the veteran benefits and the claims process and how it also how it affected the pace of processing the claims and the resources
good and bad on the pace thing. I'll get to that. But legislation actually was just all about healthcare expansion, expansion and just the getting the veterans into the VA. I know the undersecretary of the VA, I met him recently, but their whole goal right now is to get the veterans back into the VA for their healthcare. So the PACT Act, what it did was put a big, huge spotlight on veterans and the VA, which is great, but it is, was all about extending that eligibility and mainly for toxic exposure. So if you go to the va.gov, if you go into your VA, ask them to do a toxic exposure memo or toxic exposure screening. It's really quick, but that just tells them the verification of your service and what you could potentially have been exposed to. I want to say it doesn't matter if you were deployed or not, that it was very geared toward exposure, the sand pit or the burn pits, the sand, the dust, things like that. They were very specific to deploy to Iraq and Afghanistan. However, we are getting, if you worked on vehicles, if you were maintenance, if you worked on the flight line, and no matter what your MOS was, you were exposed to fumes and gases and toxic things. And anything I put down is occupational exposure, an environmental exposure, whatever exposure you had in the service, we will put that down. But the PACT Act mainly is a big push to expand the healthcare, expand the eligibility, and get the veterans back into the VA for healthcare. And you can enroll anytime. So go to va.gov.
Yeah. So that's great, information to have there. Because I know a lot of people, especially the Iraq and Afghanistan era of veterans that have served over there, they've been exposed, pretty much everyone I've talked to who've been over there, they've been exposed to the burn pits and, the toxic fumes. Even if you weren't, on a flight line or a mechanic or whatever, you still rode in the trucks and you still had to fuel the trucks and you still had to do all that kind of stuff. You're still exposed to some of that type
100%.
Of stuff.
100%. And it was in just everywhere it was, environmental, but it was what it does to that PACT Act is increase the presumptive exposure. So they are adding the presumptive service. If it's service related, it's automatically service related, service connected conditions if you were in Iraq and Afghanistan or Vietnam or Camp Lejeune, things like that.
Right. And so you mentioned a key word there, and I want to just touch on that is presumptive. And so for the listeners, the presumptive conditions are things that basically the VA is just assuming that because you have this condition and you were in, maybe a certain area or did a certain job or something, they just assume that, yes, that's connected to your service. Right. And so there's, part of the claims process is connecting whatever the condition is to your service. And in cases like this, like what you're describing, it's just automatically assumed. There's no additional documentation or, paperwork or whatever that's necessarily required. It just, because you served in maybe a certain area, like you said, Camp Lejeune or, during a certain time period, maybe, or whatever the cases may be, and it's different for, there's a lot of other things outside.
Yeah, there's
of
a whole list of areas, that UAE, anywhere that you served, and even if you weren't directly in Iraq and Afghanistan, definitely, there's a whole list of that they concede. They have conceded that, you were exposed to particulate matter of some sort that could affect this. That's why we're seeing a lot of respiratory stuff, a lot of sinus stuff, issues, things like that. So
sure. Now, I know a lot of folks out there, they put off seeking the benefits that they have, I guess earned, for lack of better words. They put it off for one reason or other. Maybe they feel like they don't deserve it, or they feel like, I'm taking away from somebody else, which is not true. I think we've covered that on the show before, right? But is it ever too late to apply for benefits?
No, apply now and apply often. Apply. When I say that, it's like apply now You can reapply for some instances. You have to wait a year to reapply, but definitely apply. And my husband was a prime example when he's almost 60 now. He's going to kill me for saying that. But, when he was 20 something and doing high speed, low drag type stuff and jumping out of helicopters, he broke his foot. And when you're 20, you heal fast and you just move on, right? And now he's like, okay, now my ankle. So reapply. If you didn't apply before, I've had Vietnam vets come in and never claimed anything. And they have never applied for disability. And now they're presumptive for Vietnam for Agent Orange. So yes, apply anytime. And sometimes you have to reapply. I had a vet that literally, he was on my podcast at one a few weeks ago, but he had to apply 19 times for the same before he got the claim.
That's a little kind of like
little extreme,
kills my soul a little,
I know.
They got to go through that much to get the benefits that they deserve. But I guess the point is, it's never too late. Apply for it. If it gets kicked back and gets denied, either you can appeal that or, you can reapply later on. Is there a benefit to waiting a year and reapplying versus appealing the decision?
I am not an appeals attorney or anything like that, or I'm not sure exactly what they look at. I just know if you reapply or appeal, they send you right back to me. The VA provider. And I always, if I don't have an x-ray, an MRI, a sleep study, a pulmonary function testing, things like that, I always recommend and request that the vet be sent for that. So I have additional information. If you have additional documentation that changes that claim, definitely reapply. If you have additional documentation that comes and says, is showing arthritis changes now, and I can tie it directly back to my service type thing. Just reapply. And it doesn't, like you said at the beginning, it doesn't hurt to reapply. It doesn't hurt to apply early and often, definitely.
Sure, sure. And for folks who have, you mentioned this a little bit earlier, if they have medical records that are outside of the VA, it's important to get those records to the VA. In the application process itself on the website, there is a place for you to upload supporting information. So that could be, a place that you could do that. Or like you said, you can hand deliver the documentation.
I have a ton. Send it to me, email it to me, bring it in to me. I will take a picture of it and upload it to their chart right then. So
perfect.
Different ways that it can be handled. Some of these guys and ladies, all the service members, they have zero records. They were out in the field or they were out in combat and they just kind of got, duct taped together and sent back out. It's not like they came in and said, okay, sign here and wait for your appointment. It was real combat stuff or real in the field stuff. We just don't have the records, but tell me the story. I want every bit of information because some of the people that are looking through records may not be medical. They may not be, things to that effect. They're looking to make sure boxes are checked or things to that effect. So it is up to me to tell your story. So make sure whoever you see for the VA, for the claim, you tell them, every little detail you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't hold back on those details.
No.
If you have an hour and you're with the person for an hour and or you have that time available and you're only in there for 15 minutes, there's probably more of the story that you could probably have told them that you could have kind of used it during that time. So use the time, get the information to them, and that can only be in your benefit.
This is not the time to stay strong or stay humble or, embrace the suck, as my husband says.
Yeah.
this is not the time to keep sucking it up. I want to hear everything. You're not complaining. Don't leave anything out, things like that. So tell me what we need to hear to help you. And it just makes my process easier. Now, if in the process itself, you know, the veteran may be a little, I don't want to say discouraged or frustrated with the timeline sometimes, because if you come to me and I don't have documentation, x-rays, things like that, we have to kind of piece it together. And I have to ask the VA to order things. Or I will tell my veteran, ask your primary care to order you a pulmonary testing. Ask them to order you an x-ray. Ask them to order you things like that. So that kind of delays it a little bit because I have to order it. Or I don't order it. I ask the VA to order it. And then they send me those results. So a little frustrating sometime on the timeline.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know the timeline has actually gotten better over the years. I had a claim, you know, years ago that I filed, and it took close to a year, I think, for it to go through. And then I had another claim a little while later, and it was, I mean, within a month, it was decided on. And so it got so much better, in as far as those go.
Keep in mind that from the PACT Act from last year, when it passed, thousands of veterans now are flooding the system, which I love, and we will get them taken care of. But it may be from a few weeks, a few months, you know, but still better than it had been.
Right.
And innovation and technology and, yeah, just modernization of charts and stuff, the EHRs and stuff.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And definitely don't. This is not to discourage anybody from applying, especially if they have these types of conditions. Maybe it will take a little bit longer now than my experience from a couple of years ago, but that's fine, because if you, from the date that you submit that intent to file, you'll get the back pay for that. So even if it does take a couple months, you'll get the back pay, from that time period there. So, basically in one lump sum. So, maybe it's a little frustrating because you don't know. But once it's approved, you still get the money, as if it had been paid out all along. So, you just get it all kind of in one lump sum. So definitely apply, for the listeners,
But I want to stress though, that me as a provider, I have nothing to do with your rating itself.
Sure.
I just put in every kind of tiny little detail I can, but I have nothing to do with the rating. And like I said, some of these people that read it are not military or, prior military, or they're not even medical or prior medical things. Some of them, majority are, and makes it a lot easier when I talk to a military medical person.
Right. When you're looking at it, you're just looking to gather the facts and collect the information to send it over to the person who's now, like you said, checking the boxes, making sure everything's filled out correctly and that everything matches to whatever the criteria is for whatever the rating is. They're the ones who decide it.
Yeah, exactly. And when you come to see me for an exam, it is just that. It is a medical exam. I cannot do your treatment plan. I cannot write prescriptions. I cannot change any treatment plan. I can ask you to request something from your primary care or the VA, things like that. I can recommend stuff. I can request stuff from the VA, but I cannot do any kind of treatments. So that's a big kind of misconception when people come to see me, is that it's kind of like a regular doctor visit. This is completely different, completely different. I am not, I don't have my prescription pad there.
Right, exactly. And that was actually going to be one of the questions that I had was, any misconceptions that people have when they come in for these exams. And you're absolutely right. You're not their regular doctor. You're not the one who is, deciding the treatment plan or writing prescriptions or changing prescriptions or changing anything about that. You're just there strictly for gathering evidence for the purpose of this claim.
Right. And if I don't have that data or evidence, I'm going to request it. So again, I may send you somewhere else or tell, but to me, I literally on almost every chart I do, I request an updated something, an updated x-ray, MRI, testing of some sort, because I'm all about kind of data and evidence finding.
Right. For the veterans out there who maybe like the guy that you mentioned that had to file 19 times, I know that's kind of an extreme case, but for the folks that are out there maybe feeling overwhelmed or discouraged by the process, are there any things that you would offer as far as advice to staying resilient and advocating for themselves throughout this whole journey?
Is to definitely keep track of your claim. Like I said, the modernization and the computer innovations and stuff now makes it a lot easier for you just to go on va.gov and see where your process is or where your claim is in the process. Because again, you know, I have a couple of vets I saw last week that they are sending them for the testing that I requested, but it's not till another couple of weeks. So then they have to send it back to me. Then I add it back to the chart. You know, things like that. So it can take weeks to months. It's a process. And it's depends on any additional testing, what all your claims are. I have some come in with just two or three claims. I've had some come in with one claim, but then some come in with a list of claims. Yeah. So if you have a list of claims, it's going to probably take, you know, some may take longer than others to get that rating. So just be patient. It's worth it. Still file. Still go see the examiner and see what they say. Talk to your VA, see what they say. Either if you're not close to a VA, go to the va.gov site. But just keep track of your all your resubmissions and your claim, where it is in the process, and if the diagnosis or the diagnostics, like the imaging, things like that, are complete, and if they've been uploaded to your chart.
Right, exactly. And it's really easy to go onto the website and just keep track of all of that that stuff, because it's right there. It's in the portal, for lack of better words. You know, it's right there, and you can kind of see where it is in the process. And I forgot how many steps there are in the process, but there's even like kind of like a timeline that just like tells you this is where it's at in the process. And you know, we're waiting for you know, the reviewers to, you know, take a look at it or whatever, wherever it is in the process, it gives you kind of that update. So,
And I think a lot of young service members may not realize that if you have a hurt knee now or you know, back, whatever it is, shoulder, and then, you know, you get rated for that claim because it, you know, we can put it in your service record. Then down the road, if you need surgery on it, the VA will take care of it. If you need prescriptions for it, if you need medical devices for whatever claim, you know, things like that, it will be much easier in the long run if you claim now and, you know, keep every documentation you can.
Right. And for those service members, like if you can, you know, obviously I know I've been in combat. I know where what it's like being overseas. It's not always the easiest to get stuff documented and, you know, see a doctor and things like that. But like you said, they might duct tape you together and send you back out. And, you know, it is what it is. But if you can get stuff documented and have that information, it makes the process so much easier, because there's something connecting that problem to your military service. And that's, to me, I think that's one of the biggest hurdles that a lot of people have to get over. Maybe I'm wrong, you know, based on your experience, but.
Well, it just helps expedite the process. It makes my process flow so much easier, things like that. And I don't want to discourage people from, you know, one, you have to embrace the suck sometimes. You have to just suck it up, because we don't want you to go into war not ready, that type of thing. So, but I just saw this morning, and I sent it to my husband, on YouTube, a little short video of a drill instructor just yelling at this Marine. You know, he's a Marine yelling at, you know, or he was very calm, actually, but he was, you know, talking to this Marine. And then the first comment on there was like, and the VA wonders why we don't report more things. You know, it's like, so I want it to be both. I want you to be, you know, be strong when you have to, be ready for war when you have to. Be that fighter that when you have to, but you can also go to the clinic and say, I hurt my ankle, to have it documented. One sentence, you know, my claim today is I hurt my ankle. That literally that claim can go on your chart.
Exactly. And when you do that, now that there's that record and that kind of paper trail, I guess, if you will, and that can then be used to help, a claim somewhere down the line. And
that is your STR, your surface treatment record that they will send me.
Right. Exactly. So, well, this has been a great kind of insight into the kind of the claims process and the exam process itself. Cause that's sort of like a black box. Like, I think a lot of people can kind of figure out the before the claim, like the gathering evidence, like that kind of stuff makes sense. But when you walk into that room with the examiner, it almost is a little bit scary because you're like, I don't like there. If I say the wrong thing, is this whole claim going to be denied or, whatever?
Yeah, 100%.
And it's not that, I think people like yourself, you're on the side of the veteran. Like you want them, you want to get the right information and document it so that if they're eligible for this claim, for this disability, then they get it.
You're not out there
find holes in their story and like totally blow everything up. You're just trying to document the facts. And as long as you're being truthful and giving the correct information, then, that's your job, is to gather that stuff. And, then it's, obviously it's out of your hands. It's in the reviewers and everyone kind of makes those decisions, but basically just give the information, give the facts. There's nothing really, it's not scary. There's nothing to be, worried about or, anxious about before going into it. It's just a routine kind of exam almost.
I love you saying that. I love you saying that because it is. A lot of people are scared when they walk in. I'm like, I try to put them at ease, tell them my military family, and I say, I'm on your side. I'm trying to hear the story.
Right. Exactly. And that's all it is. Just hearing a story and telling it, with as much detail as you can to try to help yourself out. And that's really, I think, where people need to get their head to be able to go through these exams. So, because that's great. Now, I don't want to wrap up this show before giving you a chance to plug your podcast. You mentioned it a little bit earlier. The podcast, the Monica Stanford Show, and tell us a little bit about it, what listeners can expect from it when they tune in.
Oh, gosh. Yep. Thank you so much. It is called the Monica Stanford Show. I know I had it called something else before and I got it shut down. So anyway, it was Monica Stanford Show. It's on Spotify and iHeartRadio. I teach health policy at University of West Florida. So it's some health policy related, meaning I talk to representatives, senators, county commissioners, things like that, that have to do with healthcare policy usually, or veterans. I've had maybe 5 shows that have to do with veterans. I just had somebody on from the VA. So I talk to, my tagline is kind of, I talk to anybody I want to about whatever we want to talk about. So, because I find so many different things interesting. I just talk to everybody. I've had chefs and pastors and, the president of Waffle House was on. So, So I talk to business people, leaders, veterans, you name it.
That's pretty cool. So you said Spotify and iHeartRadio. Go check out the Monica Stanford Show. I'll have a link to that in the show notes as well for folks who want to take a look at that. But before we wrap up, I always like to end the episode with a little bit of humor, just to put a smile on some people's faces. I know, laughter can be the best medicine. That's what they say. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm not a doctor, but I'm going to go with it. Typically I'll either tell a joke or watch a funny video or something stupid to just get people to laugh. And if the joke sucks and I can't deliver it well, you can at least laugh at me and I'm fine with that. So,
I'm used to my husband's dad joke. So,
well, this is probably going to be on par with that. Anyways, so you can get your eye rolls in if you need to. with that. So a veteran walks into a bar, grabs a drink, and the man next to him starts up a conversation with him. And after a little bit, they find out that they're both veterans of the Vietnam War. And the first guy says, I was only a helicopter mechanic, but I've seen all the horrors that war has to bring. And the other guy says, I still have nightmares of all the people that I've killed. It's horrible. And the mechanic says, well, I totally understand you. I've killed 15 men. The other guy goes, wait, but you're just a helicopter mechanic. How did you kill 15 men? And the mechanic says, I never said I was a good mechanic.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow. I'm like, where is this going? Yeah, not a good mechanic.
Not a good mechanic. So anyways, thank you again for taking the time to join us and sharing, you know, information, a little bit of insight on the disability exams, the compensation and pension exams for, you know, veterans and their disability benefits. I think it's good information and also good to kind of ease the minds of some of the folks who are maybe about to go head into their exams and, you know, find out, you know, what that whole process is all about.
Yes. And if they're still in service, go get it documented.
Exactly. Yes. Get it documented. And especially like if you're like on your way out and you know, that's like, okay, I got 6 months left, go to the freaking clinic and like get stuff documented. Like just get it. Yes. If it hasn't been done before, just get it documented and be like, hey, this hurts. That hurts. This is what happened. All this stuff. Just get it in your record. So that way now it's connected to your service and it just makes the process so much easier. So thank you again for coming on.
Thank you. Sharing. This was fun. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Son, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.